We're back in Parshat Chayei Sarah as the semester starts to wrap itself up. We're going to move a little bit quicker. We're going to only have two shirim on Chayei Sarah, and there's a lot more to say. And even in this one shir, I don't think we're going to get through everything that we would even potentially be able to unpack. But I want to leave time to really delve into Toldot before the semester ends, and then we'll be solidly on track to finish Bereishit by the end of the school year. That's the goal, big picture. But for today, we're going to focus on Chayei Sarah. Let's go back to something that we talked about last year. Let's go back to our outline where we always start from. What was our breakdown of Chayei Sarah? Right, we have this opening paragraph of Chayei Sarah, which we'll keep calling Chayei Sarah, but for our purposes, it's actually useful. The second paragraph is?
Finding Rivka.
We're finding a Shidduch for Yitzchak, which is Rivka. Good. And our third paragraph was? B'nei Keturah and the death of Abraham, and the final paragraph is? Mitzvah Yishmael. Great. This we're not going to have time to deal with, except to say that this is the end, clearly the end of one stage of Kali Yisrael going into the next stage of Kali Yisrael and the conclusion of the Midah of Chesed. But we're really going to keep focusing on these first two paragraphs in the bulk of the Parsha for today and look at it on a different floor than we looked at last time. We said that there were two things that were odd about calling this Parsha Chayei Sarah. What was the first thing that was odd that we dealt with last time? Right. Why is it called Chayei Sarah if in the second pasuk it begins with the fact that she's passed away? And that's what we focused on primarily last time. The idea of kinyanim, eternal purchases, maratza machpelah, that was our focus on the word Chayei of Chayei Sarah last time. What was the second thing that's odd about Chayei Sarah that we're going to focus on this time?
Sarah.
Why is Sarah an odd part of the name of this parsha? Because what's the bulk of this parsha about? About Rivka. It's about the search for Rivka, the search for Shidduch for Yitzchak. So what's the connection between Chayei Sarah as the name for the totality of the Parsha and the fact that the majority of the Parsha really focuses on searching for Rivka, searching for Shidduch for Yitzchak? More so, we even said that we had an easier place, a better place that we could have put this whole paragraph, this opening paragraph, this small opening paragraph of Chayei Sarah. Where could we have put this paragraph? At the end of Parshat Vayera, because on a narrative level, according to Chazal, it's actually linked to Akedat Yitzchak at the end of Parshat Vayera. Last time we saw a Rashi, I want to show you the Medrash on which that Rashi is premised. Source number one, which elaborates on it more in a really beautiful way, and some of the ending we may or may not be able to come back to in this year. Ukeshashav Avraham mehar Moriah. When Avinu came back from Har Moriah, Chara Pol Shel Samael, the angel, one of the Malachim, a very dangerous and negative angel by that name. Some people don't pronounce it. I wondered it once so we can at least hear the name, but some people didn't pronounce the name. So this negative, very powerful negative angel, Malach, which was trying to stop Avraham, Shera'ah Shelo Alta Biyado Ta'avat Libo Levatel Korbano Shel Avraham Avinu. He was very upset because he wanted to get Avraham to Shecht Yitzchak, and he failed at getting Avraham to Shecht Yitzchak. Ma'asa, what did this Malach do? Halach Ve'amar LeSarah, he went and said to Sarah, Halo Shemata Mana Aseh. I'm not sure what that Rosh Hashanah is, Ba'olam. Did you not hear this terrible thing that happened in the world? Amarlo, love. No, I have no idea what you're talking about. What happened? Tell me. Amarlo, he said to her, Lakach Avraham et Yitzchak bino v'shachato v'hikrivo al gabei hamizbeach le'ola. Avraham Avinu took Yitzchak and shechted him and made him a korban on the mizbeach. Sarah started to cry. How did she start to cry? Again, this is the part that I'm not sure we're going to get to. I hope we will. How did she start to cry? Very interestingly. She cried out these three cries. They are connected what? Three tikiot? I'm linking this to what? Rosh Hashanah. Thank you. Shnat Kiot. She could have said that she cried. If the Midrash is going out of its way to say she let out three cries like a shofar, that's crying out to be understood. And then, Uparcha Nishmata Umeita. Then she died. So we read about Akedat Yitzchak on Rosh Hashanah. So a lot of things are starting to point in the direction of Rosh Hashanah, which is why we may get to it. And I'd like to get to it, depending on how much time we have, since I already started when we're already finished. So we'll see how much time we have to go. But clearly there is now a Rosh Hashanah theme developing underneath the surface here. But she dies. So coming back to our core question is that this clearly could have been somewhere else. This Chayisara paragraph. It could have been at the end of Vayira. But by the fact that it's at the beginning of Parshat Chayisara, again, it seems to indicate that these two things are linked. Somehow these issues of the death of Sarah and the search for Shidduch Yitzchak are intertwined. They're being overlaid one onto another. And as we saw last time, we didn't focus on it because that was for this year, but we did read these psukim, and I said, keep an eye on this because it's going to come back. The Torah itself indicates that these two things are layered, not just by putting them in the same parsha, but if we turn to the next paragraph, that 70 pasuk paragraph that is the search for Rivka, let's look at how that paragraph ends, source number 2 in your sheets. The very end of the story of the search for Rivka. Yitzchak goes out to talk in the fields, which is the source for what mitzvah? Mincha, right? This is going out to daven mincha, according to Chazal. Lifnot arev, right before dusk, meaning close to the nighttime. And he looks up and sees that there are camels coming. Rivka looks up and she sees. Yitzchak, and she falls off of the camel for some reason by seeing Yitzchak. But Tomer El Ha'eved, she says to the Eved Eliezer, who is this man who's coming toward us in the fields? Right? Keeping her fingers in the Magen David Adom. Right? That she's hoping this is going to be the guy. Right? She's very, I assume that's why she's asking. Vayomer Ha'eved, hu Adoni vatikach hatsaif vatitkas. This is my master, and she took a veil and covered her face. There's obviously a lot of things to unpack in these psukim. And so Eliezer then goes to Yitzchak and tells him the whole long story that we just got not once but twice in this parsha, watching Eliezer go through it and then hearing him repeat it to Lavan and Betuel. So he then repeats the story once again, though we don't get it expanded upon in Sukkim. He tells it to Yitzchak, and then comes our key pasuk, which is the final pasuk of the paragraph. This is the final chord of the search for Rivka, and emphasizes everything that we're pointing out here about how the two enemies must be overlapped. Yitzchak goes and takes Rivka specifically into his mother Sarah's tent. Sarah came back, right? Literally and figuratively. Came back in the text, but like something clearly has come back here in terms of the unit of Sarah. And again, Hohela Sarah Imo, Sarah his mother, Vayikach et Rivka, and there he took Rivka for himself, meaning that concept of Vayikach and the Kinyan and the fact that they began their bond together, Vatilo Leisha, Vayaveh, and he loved her. And he came to love Rivka, and they lived happily ever after, and Pasuk. Right? Thank you. Somebody's looking inside. No. The end of the Pasuk and the end of the paragraph about finding Rivka is Vayinachim Yitzchak Acharei Imo. Then, finally, Yitzchak was consoled over the death of his mother. Right? So Rebbe pointed out, also tongue-in-cheek, because there's a lot more depth to it than that, right? Freud would have had a party with this paragraph. It's a very odd-sounding pasuk. Yitzchak meets his shidduch. I'm so happy to meet you. Come into mommy's tent. Then we're going to connect and be husband and wife. And now that we're husband and wife in this tent, now I can finally get over the loss of my mom. Right now that's really reducing the text, and we're talking about Yitzchak and Rivka here. But on the surface of the text, like, what's going on? These inyanim seem clearly linked. The Torah is telling us there's something very deep happening here in terms of the connection between the death of Sarah and, on the other hand, the search for Rivka. And Rashi embellishes it. Rashi brings it out. He says, source number 3, in bringing Rivka into Sarah's tent, because again, things here are a lot deeper than they are just sitting on the surface. These are very deep inanim. What happens next? Says Rashi, "Vayivyeh ha'ohela v'naaseit dugmat Sarah yimo." He brings Rivka, and then she becomes the image of Sarah, his mother. As though we didn't get it beforehand, but no, it goes farther than that. Kilomar v'arehi Sarah yimo. She was just like Sarah. She calls manja Sarah kayemet. As long as Sarah was alive, there were three miracles that happened in that tent always. One, near daluk me'erev Shabbat le'erev Shabbat. There was a candle that would light from one Shabbos to the next. Uvracha mitzuya ba'isa. There was tremendous bracha in the dough. There was endless bread. The anan kashur ala ohel. And there was a cloud that would attach itself to the oil of Sarah and Abraham. All things which are also indicating, linking back to what? Or linking forward to, foreshadowing. The Mishkan of the Beit HaMikdash. Right? Ohel Moed. Very fascinatingly, we can already see Siman Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim. Sarah's tent was the Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim somehow, which if and when we as a Midrashah want, just like we came back to Bereshit, if we get back to Shemot, when we deal with the Shemot issues in the Mishkan, I mean, this is the Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim of a lot of issues with regards to the Mishkan of the Beit HaMikdash. Once Sarah died, Umishameita Pasku, they all stopped. And then Ukishabat Rivka Chazru. But when Rivka came back into, when Rivka entered into the tent, they all came back. On the level of Pshat, on the level of Chazal, on the level of the Mefarshim, these two things are not separate things. The paragraph of Chayesara and the paragraph of the search for Rivka, the text itself, Chazal, they're all telling us that these two things are somehow interwoven with each other. And they're interwoven with each other in a way that we don't see by anybody else. It's a very unusual thing. When we look at the story of Abraham, we don't even relate to his parents once, Lechacha mi'artzcha, umulartcha, umbeit avicha, el artzareka. Then his parents are done with the story. We're finished with them. We're not interested in them anymore. When we swing around to Yaakov, who sends Yaakov to fight a shidduch? Functionally. Rivka. I mean, because Esav wants to kill him, there's other factors there for sure, but Rivka's the one who sends him back to Laban's house to find, eventually, Rachel and Leah. He has lots of kids there, and then what does he do? He comes back, and he and his family bury Yitzchak. So we don't see this inyan of the death of a parent causing the search for a wife, which then consoles over the loss of the mother. This is a very Yitzchak-oriented thing. This is only happening by Yitzchak. And the Pesukim are emphasizing it by Yitzchak. What is it about Yitzchak that this is coming out? Why is this part of Yitzchak's journey? Why is this part of the essence of what Yitzchak is all about? Why is Yitzchak the one to bring out? Which again, we don't see by the other Avot. Take a look at the next Rashi. I gave it to you as source number 4 just to break it up. But it's the very next Rashi on the very same Pasuk. Acharei imo, says Rashi again, and we don't see this by the other Avot. Derech Eretz, it's the way of things in life. Kol zman she'imo shel adam kayemet, karuchu etzla. As long as one's mother is alive, that person is enmeshed in the reality of their parents, in the reality of their mother. Umisha meta, and when one's parents, lo aleinu, passes away, humit nachem biishto, he becomes consoled in the context of his wife. So Rashi is giving us a klal, but as we just said before, the full-fledged expression of this klal doesn't come out by every one of the avot. The full-fledged expression of this klal only comes out by Yitzchak. Why Yitzchak? Why in Chayisara? What's happening here? Why is Yitzchak the one to bring out this reality, and what's it trying to tell us? Now, while we only see this specifically by Yitzchak, we actually have a paradigm for this earlier. There is actually an earlier shidduch that's made in the Torah that emphasizes this point and foreshadows this very reality. What was the earlier shidduch that was discussed in the context of Torah? Excellent. Adam and Chava. The first shidduch. They didn't have so many resumes back then. First of all, not sure they had paper. Second of all, it was a pretty simple equation. Man, woman, no one else, we're good, right? Halavai was that simple these days, right? It was it. That was the whole process, right? But it wasn't exactly the whole process. There was a process also by Adam Arishon. And let's go back to the Sukkim and see how that process plays itself out, and then also what the Torah tells us about the nature of that relationship between a husband and a wife. Going back to Inyanim, we've seen in Bereishit before in source number 5. Vayomer Hashem, when God puts Adam in Gan Eden, Peret Bet Pasuk Yudchet, Lo Tov Heyota Adam Levado. It's not good for mankind to be alone. We're not meant to lead a lonely, solitary existence. We're meant to live in the context of relationship, parentheses, something we've talked about many times already just this semester. Now we have a lot more content to pour into that Pasuk. Take all of the meta layers that are there, that we are meant to exist in the context of relationship. That is one of the overarching concepts of life. Therefore, Aselo Ezer Kenegdo. And then, as we talked about in Bereshit Shiurim, God then produces all of the animals. Adam, on whatever level, and the Gemara indicates that it was in a very deep level, goes through all of the animals to see if he's compatible with any of the animals, and he realizes he is not compatible with any of the animals. So he also goes through his own dating process. He goes through his own process of figuring out, this is not the one, this is not the one, this is not the one. I'm looking for something specific. I'm looking for the other half of myself. Where does that concept come from? Right here. He's going to literally produce the other half of himself. He realizes none of these animals are what I'm really, none of these creations are what I'm connected to. The lo matza izer connecto at the end of pasuk chaf. Then chaf aleph. Therefore, Hakadosh Baruch Hu puts a sleep on him. Vayishan vayikach echad mitzalotav vayiskor basar tatena. Vayiven Hashem Elokim et hatzela asher lakach min haadam liisha vivel haadam. He puts Adam Rishon to sleep. Puts him under anesthesia. He's out cold. He takes a part of his side out of him. He builds that into woman and presents Adam to Chava and Chava to Adam. Vayomer Adam, Zot Hapa'am Etzem Me'atzamai. Now I know that this is for me. Ubasari Besari, Lizot Ikarei Ishaki Me'ish Lukachazot. This is Isha because she came from man, meaning we are two parts of one whole. One layer of it, we are two parts of one whole, and we're meant to come together. Then the Torah does something very odd, which it almost never does. It leaves the local narrative. And that's one of our buzzwords. We never leave the narrative behind. It leaves the narrative and jumps up and gives us a klal. Hear the klal with fresh ears in the context of what we just talked about of Chayisara. Al kein ya'azov ish et aviv ve'et imo. Therefore, for all time, a man will have to leave behind his mother and his father. V'davach b'isho, and then once he's done that, he can then connect to his wife. Vayula basar achad, and they can come together as one. Now, this is super weird, because what do we know about Adam and Chava? They don't have parents. Mom and dad were God. They don't have parents. And they didn't leave HaKadosh Baruch Hu behind. Meaning it's literally jumping out to tell us a klal for life. That part of the paradigm is you must leave behind your mother and your father in order to go to and connect to your spouse. Now, if this is the paradigm for life, and it is, and we might swing back to this, but when people start dating, and even worse, if they get married, and they have not yet gone through the process of Al-Kein Ya'azov Ish Et Aviv Et Imo, if either the husband or the wife is not detached healthfully from his or her parents, and they bring that into the marriage, the V'davak V'yishor L'Vayivazavasar Achad becomes very problematic. It is a necessary prerequisite. But it's a necessary prerequisite and a paradigm for life that is brought out in Bereshit, but we don't see manifest in its full form until Yitzchak. He's the one to bring it out. We're just reinforcing the question. We're reinforcing two things. The paradigm exists. It's reflected in the Parsha. And that it seems that it needs to come out through Yitzchak. And our question is, why does this need to come out and manifest in its full form specifically through Yitzchak? Yes.
What about Abraham? He literally left his parents.
But we don't see it to the extent of like he's not. It becomes even more enmeshed in the fact that like Yitzchak isn't even consoled over the death of his mother. Like he isn't done with that process until he enters into marriage. Avram seems to leave everything behind, so he does it in the way of Bereshit, if you will. It doesn't talk about it like that because he gets married before he leaves and there's just no discussion of it. Here we're struggling with the issues where they keep coming back into the Pesukim and back into the Mefarshim and back into Chazal. We're struggling with the issues. So yeah, so Avram had a very healthy relationship with Sarah. We don't see any indication otherwise. They struggle around the topic of Yishmael. All marriages have strife, especially when you give your Shekhan Mitzrit and they have a child and that child is Ishmael. I'm saying, watch out for those. Put that on the resume, okay? Right? Like, that's a whole different level of struggle, but that's already far into their marriage. And the fact that they live such a seemingly positive marriage, it seems like they did, for sure, from the text even, until that point, despite leaving everything behind, blindly following a Kadosh Baruch Hu to wherever land, we don't even know, they didn't even know where they're going, to famine, to leaving them behind, to the whole, you're my sister, don't worry, Par won't really get to you. Like, they go through a lot and they seem to do really well. But here there's this struggle of, I can't move forward until I get to Rivka. There's this, the two, again, the two being overlapped is, let's even refine it. I'm going to refine. Love you. This paradigm is the paradigm supported by Bereshit. It needs to happen. Let's assume that all of the avot successfully go through it and all of the imaot successfully go through it. Rivka. Rivka says, bye mom and dad, totally don't care. Actually, I'm very excited to get into this beautiful Zorah and you're all really kind of creepy and evil and I'm happy to go off and meet Yitzchak. Right? That was meshing the text and Chazal. Right? So let's say, fine, you're right, Shandy. I'm being serious, you're right. Then what is it about Yitzchak that's bringing out these two overlapping? About the density of the difficulty in separating out these issues. Let's refine it and pitch it your way. Why Yitzchak? So I agree with you. Well done. Yeah?
Could it be because he's the first Jewish child born not in a Mizrah home?
It could be, but we're always going to go deeper than that. So let's go deeper than that. There are floors beneath us that we're about to raise up, if that mashal worked at all. Here we go. Let's plow forward. Blow the whole thing open. Speaking of shiduchim, we're going to try to do this piece. Last time, 3 years ago when I taught this, it was totally over my head and I skipped this piece. It's still over my head. I don't know if I understand it. We're going to try to do it anyway. If we lose you, let me know and we'll try to... And just like Shandy refined us, feel free to help refine this year. Okay? Here we go. I really wanted like another week to work on this. I'm very serious. There were 3 or 4 other shiur I wanted to work, to listen to and try to put it together and get every fine point down. Didn't have that week, but we're going to do it anyway, and I think we'll be good, and I think it's an important enough point to do our best to plow through the sources and to see what we can come up with. Ready?
Yes.
Ready? It's Thanksgiving break, basically starting tomorrow. Are we ready?
Yes.
Okay, this is the last thing. You're going to take this with you. It's a break. You'll listen to it on recording over break. Here we go. Here we go. Let's switch gears. To get to the crux of the issue here, we're going to turn to the cycle of the year, which my Rebbe actually has a whole separate set of shirim from a long time. He doesn't give the shirim anymore, I don't think. But he gave when I was in yeshiva on the cycle of the year and takes a lot of these concepts and creates a framework for them in an elegant, beautiful way that I hope I grasp in some small way. Speaking of shiduchim, right, that's our topic with Yitzchak and Rivka. Speaking of shiduchim, and applying it in the context of time to the Jewish year, what time in the Jewish year, in its essence, is about bonding, love, shiduchim? What's the time of year? Excellent, Tu B'Av. Tu B'Av. Now, that's true, but it's not completely true. It's about half true. Not half true in the sense that that's only what Tu B'Av is about, that there are a lot more layers of Tu B'Av. It's half true because it's only one of 2 days where that's what the essence of the day is about. Let's read the Mishnah at the end of Masechet Ta'anit together. Amar Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, source number 6. Amar Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Hear the words. Lo hayu yamim tovim li Yisrael. There were no yom tovs, plural, for Yisrael. Like Chamisha Asar Be'av, the...
The Yom HaKippurim.
Tu Be'av and Yom Kippur. That on both of those days, says the Mishnah, Shebahem Benot Yerushalayim Yotzlot B'Klei Lavan V'Chulei, that the Benot Yerushalayim would go out wearing beautiful white dresses. Skipping forward, Benot Yerushalayim Yotzot V'Cholot B'Kramim, and they would go and they would sing and dance in the vineyards. Umahin Amot, what would they say? Bachor, good Jewish boy, Sama Inech Reima Taborer Lach, choose the one that you want, and they would make Shiduchim on those days. First of all, with all of the other things that are going on in Yom Kippur, we tend to forget that that's one of the layers of Yom Kippur. How does that fit into Yom Kippur? Hopefully we'll come to some understanding of that by the end of this year. But much more weird than that, much more problematic than that, I would even say, if one understands how the cycle of the Jewish year works, is that we never have 2 days that share the same actions or theme. That's not how it works. Yom Kippur isn't Pesach. Pesach isn't Purim. Purim isn't Shavuot. Shavuot isn't Pesach. Each one has their own unique underlying themes, their own unique content, their own unique expressions and mitzvot. What does it mean when the Mishnah says that there are 2 days that share this theme of Shidduch? And the expression in these women going out and dancing in the fields, and they're making shidduchim in the fields. That's very problematic. That's not how the cycle of the Jewish year functions. The only way to really understand that, claims my Rebbe, which makes a lot of sense to me, is that you have to say that shidduchim is in fact not associated with one date on the Jewish calendar, but it's really a... What's going to be our word?
It's going to be a process.
Well done. I was just quoting you, Shandir. Says Shandir, it has to be a process. Where the process that unites these two is the concept of Shidduch. And that's what gets us from one to the other. And therefore, they're not two different dates weirdly sharing the same expression and underlying theme. It's one theme, one content that is linking those dates together in a process that takes us from one to the other. If Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, if this is true, then underlying the entire progression from Tisha B'Av through Tu B'Av, through Elul, into Rosh Hashanah, and through Yom Kippur, behind the scenes, there's some kind of a theme that has to do with Shidduch, with a love that is being developed that we have to examine. So on what level do we take that? How do we understand that? In terms of our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, there are different ways which we can define our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. What's one type of relationship that we have with the Kadosh Baruch Hu? Melech. Good. We're not going to focus on that one. Keep coming.
Yeah.
A father and a child, or a parent and a child. Right? Avinu Malkenu, Avinu Av Harachaman. We often describe the relationship with Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a parent-child relationship. One of the sources for that is at the very beginning of Yitziat Mitzrayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu refers to Klal Yisrael as Bini Bechori Yisrael, my firstborn child Israel. So there's clearly one aspect of the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is a parent-child relationship. What other type of relationship do we have? That would come back to Avinu Malkenu, even. Leaving that aspect out, what else? Of what? A relationship of love, like a spouse. A spousal, almost like a spousal relationship, kiviyachol. Right, one of the clearest sources for this is something which we constantly swing back to, which is What's a proof for this? The Kruvim, right? We've talked about many times that the Kruvim, which stood at the center of the Kodesh HaKodeshim, one of them represented Klal Yisrael, one of them represented the Kodesh Baruch Hu. When Klal Yisrael would do Ratzon Hashem, they would lovingly gaze at each other in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. And when they wouldn't do Ratzon Hashem miraculously, they would then face away from each other. But there is a level of ahava, as you put it. There's a relationship of love of a husband and a wife, of a spousal relationship, standing there in the relationship between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. Another example of this is a whole book of Tanakh. What book is that? Shir HaShirim. Shir HaShirim is all about, on the surface, the relationship of love between this man and this woman, which everybody understands to mean as a paradigm for the relationship between of love between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in fact, Rabbi Akiva even says in the Mishnah that all of Ketuvim are Kodesh, but Shir HaShirim is, just like Shir HaShirim, Kodesh HaKodashim. We're letting it right back to those same Inyanim. So in fact, we find that there is an underlying theme from Tisha B'Av to Yom HaKippurim, starting all the way back in
the beginning of the process of fixing things.
Okay. Starting from Tisha B'Av, right here, this is what we were about to say, where there is clearly a problematic relationship that Tisha B'Av brings out. Starting from Tisha B'Av, trying to mend that problematic relationship, and that is related, connected to this topic of Shidduch, Shidduchim, coming together of two people. So if Shidduchim is underlying this process of from Tisha B'Av to Yom HaKippurim, then one would suspect that the concept, just like of Shidduchim, of a man and a woman coming together over this process from Tisha B'Av to Yom Kippur, so too on a macro level, it's about Klal Yisrael attempting to come together with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, starting from Tisha B'Av, and going all the way until Yom Kippur. Which culminates on Yom Kippur. And what do we do on Yom Kippur? We actually go into the Kodesh HaKodashim with the Kruvim. Meaning it culminates in that moment we actually enter into the Kodesh HaKodashim, the one time a year that we actually do that. Of the full coming together, the full bonding of the Ish and the Isha, or if you will, the full bonding of Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The culmination, the end of this process. Let's take it one step deeper. What is this day of Tisha B'Av all about? The Gemara asked that question on the Mishnah. The Mishnah said there were never days of Yom Tov for Yisrael like Tisha B'Av and Yom HaKippurim. Says the Gemara, Yom Kippur, I understand that it's Yom Tov Yisrael, that it's a day of Simcha, that it's a credible Yom Tov, because we get Slicha Mechila. Yeah, Slicha Mechila, that's the words of the Gemara. We get forgiveness on that day, it's an incredible Yom Tov. But what's so great about Tisha B'Av? What happened on Tisha B'Av? The Gemara, having asked that question, then goes through five or six responses of important events that happened on that day, in an explanation of why Tisha B'Av is such a great day, including, but not limited to, it's not on the source sheet because I wanted to get everything on one page, which is including they were able to bury the dead in Beitar, the people, the generation that was going to die out in the desert, every year they would see who was going to die that year, they realized that the dying had stopped 40 years later on Tisha B'Av. Binyamin, after the terrible incident of Pilegesh B'Gibah, was allowed to come back into the context of Klal Yisrael. A lot of positive things happened on that day which make it this Yom Tov, but it's very interesting that there are a lot of different things that are linked to this day. The last one is seemingly on the surface very odd and brings us to our topic. And that's what you have on your sheets in source number 7. The last reason given by the Gemara is that, no, Because comes Tu B'Av, every single year, they would stop taking wood for the Mizbeach. Why? Because the sun reaches its peak on Tu B'Av. At that point, the strength of the sun begins to go down. And it's not able to dry out the wood sufficiently enough to keep it from becoming worm-infested. So they would stop accepting wood after that point. Bottom line is, since the sun is getting weaker, it can't dry out the wood for the Mizbeach, and we would stop accepting wood for the Mizbeach on that day, and somehow that was part of the significance of Tu B'Av. From there, the Gemara says, and this is where it's going to link back into our Inyanim, says the Gemara, Mikan va'ilach, the underlines, verse number 7. Additionally, from then on, from Tu B'Av on, Dimosif Yosif, Udilo Mosif Ye'asif. It sounds cool, and it sounds like a play on words, but what does it mean? Mazet Dimosif? That which was Mazet Yosef, Losif. That which was added on. Dimosif Yosif, that which is added on will have more. Udilo Mosif, and if you don't add on, Maza Yasef. Yasef Elamav. Maza Yasef. What does it mean in that? What is the euphemism for? He'll die. Losif Elamav means to die. What does that mean? What is it talking about? Speaking of things that didn't fit on your source sheets, skip to page number 2, turn around to side number 2, for Rashi, which I wish it was on the same page. Turn to Rashi, who says, Mikan va'elech, meaning from what is from when on, from Tu B'Av on, Dimosif leilot al hayamim la'asok ba'torah, since now the sun is getting less strong, meaning the days are going to start getting shorter, when the sun gets weaker as the days start to get shorter, when you add on to the night to learn more Torah at night, Yosif Chayim al Chayav. Such a person will add life to their life. From Tu B'Av on, you start learning more at night, you will add life to your life. Dilo Yosef, if you don't, says Rashi, if you don't, Lasof Batorah Balilot, if you don't take advantage of this time and learn more Torah at night, Yeyasif, such a person will die. Mayyaseif, says the Gemara, back to the first page. Mayyaseif, what does it mean they'll die? Hear the words now. Amar Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yosef says, Tikbere ime. His mother will bury him. Says Rashi, Kilomar, Yemot belo ito. That person will not die in their time, meaning they will die in an unnatural way. One's parents should die before they do, and that person will be buried by their mothers. For those listening, I'm just flailing my arms as a sense of what is going on. What's happening? Right? What is this Gemara trying to indicate to us what's happening here? Let's pull it all together. The two most significant, most intense, most focal relationships that a person goes through in his or her lifetime is the relationship with one's parents. And of one's parents in a deeper way with one's mother. The relationship starts earlier, the relationship starts in the womb. They're fed and taken care of and given everything they need through the umbilical cord in the womb. The mother carries them earlier, feels a literally a physical connection to them until the mother actually gives birth to them. In previous generations, they were always the primary caretaker, not to the exclusion of the father, but it's heightened by the mother. So the relationship with one's parents heightened by the relationship with one's mother. And the second is with one's spouse. Right, I'm going to use the word wife to use mother and wife as a parallel, but obviously it can be translated for father and also certainly for husband. Right? It's in both directions, but we're going to be talking about our situation in Chumash, so I'm going to use mother and wife, but it goes both ways. Taking this relationship of the relationship with one's mother and the relationship with one's wife, what is the most significant, most essential difference about these two relationships which makes them categorically different? The most fundamental difference.
It's like a choice.
Excellent. You don't choose your mother. There is no element of choice by one's parents. And you choose your spouse, as we talked about last time, on both sides. The Gemara goes out of its way to emphasize, you can't, lo alein, take a man cannot marry a woman ba'al karcha. He does the kinyan kiddushin, but she has to choose to accept it. Both parties in the marriage have to choose that relationship. And that's all the difference in the world. We have these two most significant, most intense, most focal relationships. And what our Parsha is pointing out, coming back to Chayisara, is that one takes the place of the other. One has a relationship with one's parents, one has a relationship with one's mother, and that relationship is somehow replaced with the relationship with one's wife or with one's spouse. Coming back to that Rashi that we saw in source number 4, Derech Eretz, Kol Zman Sh'imo Shel Adam Kayemet Karuchu Etzla. When a person's mother is alive, they're enmeshed in that relationship with their mother. Umi Shemeta, when the person's mother, Lo Aleinu, dies, Humit Nachem Be'ishto. Somehow that relationship shifts its weight over to one spouse. Even if the mother is alive, this is a very heightened example. The example that we have here of Yitzchak, which you pointed out before, we have it now in a heightened place where Yitzchak's mother dies, and then that energy there is missing, that space is missing, and then Rivka comes along and is able to replace that hole that's left behind by Sarah. So one relationship replaces the other one, but yet those relationships are totally different. Because one is given in life, and the other one is a choice that a person has to make. The spousal relationship has to be your choice. The relationship of a shidduch is based on choice. It puts the responsibility on your shoulders. As opposed to the one-way relationship of a mother, of a parent, where the child is automatically linked to the parent and only receives from that parent, which they didn't choose. What's being brought out here is that one who does not take advantage of this process of the year from Tu B'Av to Yom Kippur is missing out on something essential that's happening in this process and essential that's happening in life. The process from Tu B'Av to Yom Kippur. In the midst of this process, what's the most significant date that we have?
Rosh Hashanah. Now it's all going to start to come back, to come together, I hope.
Is Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, what is Rosh Hashanah about? It's Yom HaDin. People's minds start to move. It's Yom HaDin. Din means, it's the day of judgment, it's the day of Din. And that means that I'm focusing from this point onward, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, on you as an individual, in terms of your choices, the choices that you are making. And whatever you get in the coming year, whatever you get going forward, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is dependent on the choices that you're making right now and going forward. Whatever you deserve, you get, and whatever you do not deserve, you don't get. It shifts and puts the entire focus on you. Every single year, the transition from Tu B'Av to Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur, it's going through the Midah of Din. Right? The Midah of Judgment. The Midah of Yitzchak and Gevura. It's going through the Midah of Din, the Midah of Gevura. It's the transition every single year from two types of relationships with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Moving in the summertime, the relationship that's a more parental-like relationship, the summer months where we're just given, where we start with Pesach, where we have no merit of our own and God just takes us out. We work for it, but a Kadosh Baruch Hu that on Shavuot gives us the Torah. And there's a lot more behind here that we don't have time to unpack. The summer time of the year, the time of the link to the sun, which is what gives. That's what it does. It gives light. It doesn't require anything in return. It's the more chesed-oriented time of the year, the more giving time of the year, the time of the year that's more reflective of the parent-child relationship. The predetermined relationship, the giving relationship, the relationship where we're just receiving as receivers. That more one-way type of relationship, like a parent to a child. And then we switch at this time of the year through the Midah of Din to a relationship which is now two ways, that puts the responsibility on us. Whatever is going to be accomplished going forward is going to be accomplished by the two of us. We're now an active member in that companionship, in that partnership, in that relationship. And whatever will be accomplished is going to be accomplished by the two of us. Whether it's moving to the spousal relationship, through the process of Shidduch, Tu B'Av, Yom Kippur, or this shift through Din to a relationship of a spousal relationship, so to speak, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nationally and personally. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying to every member of Klal Yisrael, and to Klal Yisrael as a whole at this time of the year. It's a joint effort to bring the world to its tikkun. This transition puts things into a time of the year where the focus is now on you. And you are supposed to get ready from the switch from a more dependent relationship. For a more dependent relationship to a more active role that's coming out through the Midah of Din. A person who does not take advantage of that transition in the time of the year, that does not put themselves into that independent place, taking responsibility through the Midah of Din, such a person, what's going to happen to them, says the Gemara? What is he specifically? Their mother will bury them. A whole different floor. Tikbere ime. They've never left the dependent time of the year. They've never left behind the dependent reality that they're supposed to shift out of. And a person who doesn't take advantage of this time of year, starting from Tu B'Av, and focus more on making the active choices, taking advantage of the time given to them to invest in the relationship, Tikbere ime, their mother will bury them. They will have never successfully separated from the dependent stage of life to move on to the independent, choice-oriented stage of life. That person will never get to a stage in life where his or her accomplishments are their own. That person will be stuck in a relationship where everything is given to them by a Kadosh Baruch Hu, similar to being stuck in a relationship with one's parents in an unhealthy way, where they're continuing to receive and relate in that way and aren't able to break off and make a relationship of choice. And this is one of the themes of Rosh Hashanah, of needing to break away from one's mother and the pain of a mother who feels distance from their child on all levels of being. What are some of the themes of Rosh Hashanah that we read in the Torah, that we read in the Haftarah?
Sisra.
The Gemara tells us, where do we learn out the Tekiot from? The mother of Sisra, who loses her child. We saw in this Midrash from the beginning of Shir, when Sarah finds out that she thinks Yitzchak died, what happens? She cries out with Tekiot. In the Haftarah we read Rachel, Mivakel Baneha. There's this constant underlying theme of almost of Tikbereime. If that isn't successfully accomplished, if there isn't a moving on beyond that, if we don't move into a reality of din, we've already telegraphed this, which is fine, that's good. It's not, shirim don't need to reveal, shirim needs to be understood. It's a common misconception, right? You're supposed to understand along the way. Who is the embodiment of the Midah of Din and the Midah of Gvura? Yitzchak. And it is on Rosh Hashanah that we actually read about. What do we read about in terms of Yitzchak on Rosh Hashanah? Akedat Yitzchak. On the flip side, the full emergence of Yitzchak as the embodiment of Din and Gvura. And therefore the embodiment of transitioning into a reality of work and choice that comes about through Yitzchak and his Midah of Din itself. It's because he personifies and embodies this Midah of Din that when he gets married, it's going to have to be the acting out of this transition. He's going to have to go through the detachment from the dependency relationship with his mother to connecting with another woman out of choice and going through a deen orientation with regards to relationships. That's the intensity of what's happening over here. That's the overlap by Yitzchak. Yitzchak is embodying that transition of the fact that one always needs to be engaged in relationship, but that the healthy process is to detach from the relationship with one's parents. In parentheses, I don't mean that one should cut off all contact from parents when they get married. It's obviously not the point here. But one needs to disengage from that being the primary relationship in their lives, that relationship that they were born into, that they know that's comforting, where they're taken care of by default, to detach from that relationship that becomes secondary, and then focus on and put all of one's effort into the spousal relationship, which is a relationship which is of choice, where what I get out of it is what I earn. Din. Not that a relationship should be based on din, a relationship should be based on chesed. But the nature of the relationship is that I have to put into that relationship. Ahava means, if the core of it is av, av means to give. I have to keep investing, can keep on putting in. Both parties are putting into that relationship. Both kruvim are gazing lovingly at each other. The two sides are always investing. It's a relationship out of choice. And that's what we need to go through over this time of the year as well. The same type of thing. We need to be able to let go at that time of year. We need to be thinking about the fact that we're moving into a Yom HaDin, into a reality, into a time of judgment, into a time of Din, into a time of independence, into a time of choice. Because that's what we're supposed to be doing here. What happened? What's the first historical event on Rosh Hashanah? Literally, the first historical event on Rosh Hashanah. It's also the first historical event ever. Hashem created man. It's the first point of significance in the history of humankind. Adam HaRishon is born on that day. Adam is created. And everything we've been talking about all goes back to the creation of Adam. Adam HaRishon and every single person. When a neshama comes down from Olam HaEmet, a neshama comes down from a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu and a relationship in Olam HaEmet of truth, of clarity, and comes down into this world. It's here that we're supposed to reconnect with that same truth, that same Emet, reconnect with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. But now, how do we connect with the Kadosh Baruch Hu? Using what? Our key term. Using what? How do we connect with the Kadosh Baruch Hu in this world? As opposed to before Ender Lam HaEmet, where we're standing before a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Thank you, with our Bechira. Through our free choice, through our choices in this world, through our free choice in this world, where we're put into this world, this Olam, which the Mefarshim point out is Milashon, He'elam, where God is hidden. You have to fight to find Him, choose to find Him, choose to see Him. in what Chazal referred to in this Alma de Shikra, as opposed to Olam HaEmet, the world of truth, this is an Olam of Sheker, where everything is trying to hide the reality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Here we have to fight to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, experience that relationship, but we have to choose that relationship on our own. The whole habitat of Olam Hazeh is a world which you can read into it whatever you choose. And if we're going to find a Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's only after we put in the effort of finding a Kadosh Baruch Hu in this world. Beautiful pasuk from Yishlev that brings it out, and we're coming towards the end of Shir. Source number 11, Mishlei, Perek Bet Pasuk Dalet. Im tivakshenu kakesef, if you truly seek it out, like you're looking for silver, like you're searching for wealth. Ukimat monim tach pishenu, and like things which are buried, you look after it. If that's how you're searching for it, then az tavin, then you'll come to understand what. What are the next words? Az tavin yirat Hashem. You want to come to understanding of yirat Hashem, yirat shamayim, din. You want to come to a real understanding of yirat Hashem. Then you have to search for it, work for it. Tibakshenu kakesef, kimat monim tach pesenu, tach pesena. Az tavin yirat Hashem v'da'at Elokim timsa. That's how you find it. The midah of Yitzchak, the midah of Gvura, the midah of Din, the midah of Yirat Shamayim. That comes as a result for digging for it, looking for it with one's entire being through one's lifetime. And when a person finally finds a Kadosh Baruch Hu, then they come to a connection to the truth here in this world, in the same way that we had in Olam HaEmet, in the world before we got here. But it's all the difference in the world, because now it's out of our own choice. We have the choice to walk in the opposite direction, now we chose to walk to it. It's a relationship of choice. That's the ultimate relationship that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is interested in. Otherwise, there's no point in being here. There's no point in being in Olam Hazeh. The point of being here is to connect and to make that relationship happen. To move away and have it no longer be a one-way relationship, like a relationship with a parent and a child, but a relationship that's more similar to a husband and a wife. A spousal relationship of working for it and earning it and choosing that relationship. A relationship we create through the choice and through our own decisions. The most significant transition in that process, on the microcosmic level, and with this we'll close, is the moment which a person actually finds their shidduch and finds their marriage in Olam Hazeh. Because then that person is going through the most significant transition from a relationship in this world. Going from being dependent, being the recipient, and choosing to change the focus of one's life to move into a reality of relationship that's my own, of my own choice, where the responsibility is on me. That's what's happening here in Parshat Vayisera. Yitzchak has to be the one to bring it out, because Yitzchak is the individual who embodies Gvura, who embodies Din, and in the most heightened way, he brings out how to live that in life. Coming off of Parshat Vayera, Yirat Hashem, all the things about Din and Gvura and Yirat Shamayim that we talked about in Parshat Vayera, taking the narrative one step further into Chayisara shows us the extent to which in this world we're working on all levels to achieve the midah of Din and Gvura. To the extent where, for Yitzchak, he's given the most heightened sense of it, where he is broken away from his mother and recognizes that he needs to then shift from a relationship of dependency to a relationship of choice, and teaches us for all generations that when we come into that spousal relationship, that then we've chosen to come into it, and that becomes the primary relationship in the same way that the parental relationship is primary. Yitzchak shows us that once he gets married, then what becomes the primary relationship? The spousal relationship. And yet, they're totally different. And yet, that's the change that needs to happen. We need to get to a place where we leave our parents behind, not completely, they become the secondary relationship. And that even though it's the same space, I'm choosing to fill that same space with a relationship of choice with a spouse. And then the Anan comes back. And then the Ner comes back. And then the Bracha B'Issa comes back. Then the realities of Sarah come back. Chayei Sarah, the realities of Sarah come back in the context of the life of Yitzchak. But in a relationship that is totally different, that can be achieved only through the Midah of Din, the Midah of Gvur. For completion's sake, once we've accomplished that, then this phase of history can come to a close. We see the conclusion of the Midah of Chesed entirely, the end of this phase entirely, Sarah's gone, we've learned what we need to learn from Yitzhak in this way, and then finally Avraham and Yishmael, the last remnants of the Midah of Chesed, wrap themselves up. And we're able to move on to whole new worlds, whole new realms in Parshat Toldot. Doesn't do justice to those last parashah level underneath the surface, but that's how we would wrap things up. These are the some of the inanim that again lie behind this parsha, where Yitzchak is dafka through his shidduch, the one to activate this concept of al ken yazov ish et aviv ve'et imo v'davak mishov yilo sarachad. Bezrat Hashem. In this case, you should all be zocha, to be able to healthfully and properly and respectfully detach from your parents in the right time, be alken yazov ish et aviv ve'et imo, to leave that dependent relationship, to get to the place to have the self-awareness, to know when you've reached that place of detaching from that dependent relationship, and then successfully move on to the relationship that one needs to then achieve next, which is davak bishtovi levasar achad, put in more plural sense, to cling to one spouse and join together with one spouse, to enter into that relationship of choice, of free will, of active relationship on the microcosmic level with a spouse, and on a microcosmic level, Bezrat Hashem with the Kaddish Baruch Hu as well. Bezrat Hashem, we should all be so kind.